Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to the programme. Coming up today, show business legend Brendan Grace and his wife Eileen will be here to talk about his very successful career, their long marriage, and why recently Eileen felt the need to defend him. Also today, we'll hear how one woman reclaimed her power when she confronted the man who attacked her, and now that meeting has become a film. Our text number is 51551. You can email Miriam at rt.ie. You can find me on Twitter at Miriam O'Cal. Well, first this morning, in 2005, Alva Griffith, when she was just 21, was walking home when she was attacked and viciously sexually assaulted, during which she thought she was going to die. But she survived and the man was caught and convicted. But for Alva, the ordeal wasn't over as she tried to continue with her life. It wasn't until she made the decision to meet up with this man, her attacker, that she was finally able to move on. And this meeting, part of a form of restorative justice, has now been made into a film simply called The Meeting. And Alva, who plays herself in the film, and the film's director, Alan Gilson, join me in studio now. Thank you both very much for coming in.
Thank you, Mary.
Pleasure.
Alva, let me start with you, if it's okay.
Yep.
Do you mind just, what happened to you in 2005? Just for my listeners who may not know your story, what did happen to you?
Sure. Well, I had basically just graduated from university, and it was just an in-between period when I was going to go back and do a postgraduate course. I was working in town, just kind of saving a bit of money to go abroad with some friends. And I was travelling home one night on public transport, and basically I was followed off that the bus, and subsequently ambushed and attacked by the man that followed me off the bus. He, you know, was really quite violent, and obviously there was a sexual assault as well. And it just so happened that I was basically rescued by two individuals who passed by on the street. And obviously, you know, I'm very grateful that they did that. But they also apprehended this person. And I managed to escape, obviously, and kind of run back towards my house at that point. I did pursue things via the criminal justice system. I went straight to the Gardaí that morning. And basically, you know, I suppose, you know, that experience was challenging, but obviously critical. And I would always kind of say that, you know, people should really go down that route, no matter how kind of challenging it is in some respects. So basically, you know, I went via the court, and then there was a conviction there. There was a guilty plea, so I didn't actually need to go through the process of a trial. And I suppose, you know, that, although, I mean, in some respects, that's kind of the best you can get out of the criminal justice system, I would say. You know, I had that kind of positive outcome via the criminal justice system. But, you know, following that, I kind of felt that there was a lot of kind of, I suppose, emotional and psychological trauma, and that really wasn't healed per se by the criminal justice system. I don't feel that it in of itself kind of resolves that piece for the victim of crime. So I suppose I tried a load of different avenues, you know, all the kind of the tick the box ones, and they just weren't working for me, you know. And I kind of continued to feel a lot of a sense of a disempowerment. So no matter how kind of successful I was in life, there was always this kind of memory that would disempower me. Mm-hmm. And I also carried a lot of kind of sadness and anger as a result of the attack. And then piece by piece, you know, when something might trigger off a memory of the attack, I would begin to imagine like confronting this individual. So I would, you know, picture maybe going up to him and making a statement about how it made me feel when, you know, when he did what he did, or I'd have a question for him, you know, like, why did you do what you did? You know, because I couldn't understand, I couldn't grasp, you know, what was behind it. And just being the type of person that I am, and we all come in different kind of shapes and sizes, but I wanted to have an understanding, you know, and I wanted to complete a kind of a, this fragmented picture. I mean, it seemed so chaotic to me. I wanted to kind of solidify that chaos in some ways. So it just so happened that I was speaking to one of my sisters one day, and she mentioned Dr. Marie Keenan, who is a restorative justice practitioner. She's a psychotherapist, and she also is a lecturer in UCD. And I basically approached Marie, and she agreed to meet with me. And I basically recounted my story to her, and basically said, you know, I really feel that I want to confront this person, you know, and I gave her, you know, the background there. And at the end of that meeting, she said to me, you know, it sounds like, you know, you want a restorative justice meeting, so I will help you with that. So, I mean, that was just amazing for me. Even from that point, I felt already this kind of dark cloud lifting, you know, because I felt, you know, a hope that, that I hadn't had before. And, you know, that process itself in getting into the room with this individual was quite long. It took basically a year and a half to get there. Throughout that period, I would say there were, you know, even with initiating that process with this person, I began to feel some relief. So, for instance, when eventually he was contacted and asked, will you meet with her? I already felt a sense of empowerment because, you know, I knew that he knew that I wasn't afraid to meet him, you know. So I think that's just an important point to make because, you know, people always assume it has to end up with you being in the room with that person. But even these small kind of movements in that direction can really, really help. And then obviously, you know, it came to the day and, you know, I entered the room and met with this person. And basically that has become, you know, the film now that that recounts basically the story of what happened in the room.
And it's really powerful. I watched it, actually. It's superb. And we'll come back to that, Alan. But you know, when you walked into that room, A, who was in the room, just tell my listeners, and B, how did you feel? Did you want to go up and thump him? I mean, what was your instinct?
Sure. Well, I mean, the entire process is very well kind of defined and orchestrated. I mean, there is a very defined process in place for any restorative justice meeting, and there's a lot of preparation work involved. So, like, for instance, I knew, you know, who would be sitting where at the table. There tends to be two facilitators, obviously the two parties involved, or if there are more, and then there would be support people as well for the victim and also the offender. So in my case, there were six people there altogether. I suppose, you know, this has been building for such a long time. I had a very defined sense of, you know, what I wanted to achieve out of the meeting. And basically it was, well, first and foremost, it was probably regaining a sense of empowerment again. So, you know, I felt that by going in there, you know, I would see this person as a human. They would no longer be kind of that monster, that person that, I suppose, you know, comes out of the darkness and drags you into a bush, you know. I could actually face the human being, and that would definitely decrease my sense of fear and, you know, give me that sense of empowerment again. I wanted to humanize him for two reasons, for the fear factor, but also because, you know, which was something that I personally had set out to do, which was to forgive him. And my reason for, you know, wanting to do that really was more because I had carried all this kind of anger and the sadness for so many years. And I felt I basically had come to the realization that, like, the only person that was really suffering in that was me, because he didn't know about it. And even if he did, I felt he probably wouldn't care. So, I mean, once you acknowledge the futility of that, you know, of carrying that, you know, I felt like the only way to get rid of that was really to forgive him. But that's all very kind of, I suppose, you know, that's the kind of the theory side of it, and you actually have to do that. So, I mean, the only way I felt I could achieve that was actually to face the human and, you know, maybe just gain a sense of compassion for him, you know. So when I went into that room, you know, I was actually able to achieve all those things. And it really was so hugely transformative for me in that way.
Did you feel like you were in a more powerful position than him in the room? And did you said you wanted to forgive him.
Mm.
Did you forgive him?
I did forgive him in that room, yeah. I did. You know, I was able to, as I mentioned, sit across the table from a human, you know, and I suppose it wasn't so much maybe what he was saying. It wasn't so much, you know, the stories that he told. It was more looking across the table at a human that was, I suppose, really struggling, just struggling in a sense to exist, to have some sense of normality, you know, in their lives. And, you know, I couldn't help but feel a compassion for him, you know. I think that's a very human instinct. And, you know, he also was humanizing me as well, which was one of the reasons I was in there as well. I wanted to kind of present, look, I'm actually a person here, and you need to acknowledge that, and you have made me suffer in this way. And I was very descriptive in that, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, that was not only kind of cathartic, but it was almost honoring my suffering in that, you know, by telling him exactly what he had done and exactly how he'd made me suffer, you know. And I was able to kind of basically leave it in the room then, because, you know, it had been acknowledged by the very person that had caused it.
He didn't have to come along, did he?
That's right. I mean, yeah. It's all a voluntary kind of process. You know, there was no kind of legal obligation or anything like that on him to come. So, I mean, you have to give him credit for that as well. You know, he did turn up on the day, you know, I'm grateful for that. You know, I suppose it would also be important to say, like, something like this always would have to be kind of victim initiated, you know, especially in the context of serious crime. That's really important, you know.
But it's wonderful for you, and we'll talk about the film now, because it completely, in a way, changed everything for you, didn't it, Alva?
It did.
Which is superb. It meant you could almost go on with your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it was really and truly transformative for me. You know, I carried, like, once I walked out of that room, I literally felt physically lighter, you know, and that's not something I can really explain, but I did. And I couldn't stop smiling. And, you know, I felt really healed at a very core level. So, you know, that's how transformative it was for me. I mean, I know different people have different levels of, I suppose, benefit from it, but, you know,
for you,
that's what it was for me.
Alan Gilson, how did you come across Alva's story?
Well, I mean, I suppose it happened through a series of wonderful coincidences, but effectively our great producer, Tomás Hardiman, had met Marie Keenan. And Tomás is a man who's a profound interest in areas of trauma and forgiveness and always exploring that. And he said, come and have lunch with Marie, with no particular agenda. And over lunch, as Marie talked about the work she was doing, she told me Alva's story. And, you know, it's funny sitting with you this morning, listening to Alva again, and I know the story intimately, probably too well at this stage, but I'm reminded how extraordinary it is. I mean, the strength, the dignity, the generosity of Alva, but also that in this meeting, this kind of rather banal meeting, or certainly in a banal room, 80 minutes, something extraordinary happened. Something really quite profound. And as Marie told me the story over lunch, as we left that lunch, I said to the most, there's a film in that. Just literally the meeting. And I think, I suppose I was struck that, you know, we live in an era of kind of righteous anger, particularly from women. Totally understandable. I mean, we've seen it no more recently than this week, what's happening with the Supreme Court in the States. You know, we're at an extraordinary moment in time. But what Alva seemed to show us, I felt, was a way beyond the anger and also the kind of the harsh realities of men against women, that she seemed to have found some way of healing that. You know, and that's not to forget the trauma, you know, which is really harrowing, more harrowing than Alva's recalled this morning. And I suppose making the film, we were always trying to balance that, that this was, coming from Alva, a redemptive story, a hopeful story. And you had to hold that hope in one hand, but in the other hand, never forget the depth of the crime. And I think that's the power of restorative justice. It isn't some sort of soft, liberal process that sort of forgives everything, you know. And certainly making the film, it was very important that we never forgot how really, really, really horrendous the crime was. But just hearing that story from Marie and then later from Alva, it just felt like this was something in a very pure form that we needed to share.
And you do get that balance perfectly in the meeting. But the interesting thing is, it's a film. But tell me how you decide in the end to cast Alva as herself, because that wasn't always the plan.
No, no, not at all. I always intended to cast an actress as Alva, as we did with The Offender, Terry O'Neill, extraordinary actor.
Yeah, great performance.
Yeah, really amazing guy. But there was something about it that even went against my directorial instincts, because I knew it was a risk taking somebody who'd never acted before. But there's a certain kind of power in Alva, sparing her blushes here beside me. And there's a uniqueness about her experience. That I just kept coming back to her and feeling that she had to play herself. And I suppose that was helped in a way because Alva had prepared, as she said this morning, very carefully for the meeting. And she's also somebody who I've come to know is very steely and very composed. And so it seemed to be, even though it was a risk, it seemed to be a natural fit.
Yeah, no, and it is. How did you feel when he said, would you play yourself?
Well, a bit surprised, but at the same time, I kind of very instinctively felt, you know, that it was the right thing. You know, I felt, you know, obviously, as Anna just said, they were sticking very closely to how the meeting unfolded. And I felt really the authenticity of the meeting and the power of restorative justice would come especially through if, you know, I was sitting there presenting as I did on the very day, you know, speaking the words that I spoke, virtually. And I felt that I could, you know, contribute to that authenticity and therefore that the power of it, really, the transformative nature of it.
I think it's incredibly powerful because it is you playing yourself. Listen, our listeners are going in complete awe of this brave woman, Miriam. That's from Anne. Miriam, your guest is such a brave young woman, speaking personally as a victim of abuse. I could have recovered if the abuser apologised to me. It still haunts me. That's from Margaret. And one more. Miriam said, just wondering, did that man who attacked your guest want forgiveness? Forgiveness as distinct from just compassion? Did forgiveness matter to him as well as to you? That's a good question. Did it?
I mean, it is a good question, but I will say, you know, I went in there completely focused on what I wanted to get out of it, you know. And, you know, I don't think he ever wanted or necessarily expected forgiveness from me, but I actually did that for myself, if you know what I mean. I forgave him for me, not for him, because, you know, and hopefully it did benefit him to move on through his life. But, you know, I felt it would free me from the negativity of that experience, and it did, to be honest. So,
well, look, this great film, The Meeting, it's all around the country, isn't it, Alan?
Yes.
And there's some questions and answer sessions. Tell me about that.
Yes, we've been doing a series of question and answer sessions, and I'm sure we'll continue to do that. I mean, people are eager to engage, particularly with Alva. You know, I think hers is a remarkable testimony, and it, you know, deserves to be heard.
And would you recommend it finally, Alva, for if there is someone else listening, like one of those women who just wrote into us who is an abuser, would you recommend it to someone else, the restorative justice?
I think absolutely, if the person wants it, they should definitely, you know, move forward in the process if they can. But definitely it has to be something coming from that person, you know, that they would want it.
And I was struck, sorry, Miriam, I was struck recently somewhere in the country when we did a question answer. There were one or two women stood up at the end, having heard Alva's story, having seen the film, and said they came to the film full of trepidation. But in actual fact, what the film had given them was some hope that they could transcend their own trauma. Mm. And I think, if anything else, that's the core of Alva's story.
Yeah, and so, as all the listeners are saying, you are so brave and courageous to have told the story. It's a great film. It's The Meeting. Everyone should try and catch it. Alva Griffith, Alan Gisland, thanks so much for coming in this morning. We'll take a break.
Thank you.
Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1.